I call this September 1st meeting to order and ask you to rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can we have a roll call of members?
Ms. Robertson? Here. Mr. Shinagawa? Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stevenson?
Present.
Mr. Burbank?
Good evening.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Hattery?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
I'm here. Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Mr. Randall?
Here.
Ms. McLink-Alaire?
Present.
14 members present.
Communications, petitions, and notices?
Communications are on the desks.
We have no special orders of the day. We'll move on to privilege of the floor for the public. We have three people signed up in advance, and then others can speak if they feel inspired. Mike Lane from Dryden.
Mike Lane from the Village of Dryden. I just want to comment on your budget process, which I know you're really starting in earnest. I just handed a copy of Administrator Joe Mariana's report to you, and I just had a chance to start reading it. What I was really concerned about tonight was the frightening article in the Ithaca Journal, which told about what the increases for the state retirement will be for the county and other municipalities. Some of it approaching 50%, it said in the headlines. Our system needs to be reformed, and part of that is the system of the state retirement system itself. And it's not going to happen unless the groups of the county, the NYSEC, the groups of the other municipalities like NYCOM or Association of Towns start putting their muscle behind serious reform. Governor Patterson has been looking at this and been asking for changes Tier 5 to begin for new employees. A system that doesn't require our employees to contribute anything, there's something wrong with that. It used to be they had to contribute at least 3%, and we should change that. If it takes a constitutional amendment, we need to proceed with that. But nothing's going to happen unless the organizations that represent the municipalities that are having to shoulder these huge bills get together to ask the state to make these reforms. And we need to hold our own legislators to account for this. We know some of them have been taking advantage of it. We have a state senator who's double-dipping, getting both a retirement check and a full legislative salary check, as well as working in a law firm to gain income all at the same time. I've seen it here at the legislature where members of the legislature in the past have retired from jobs at Cornell, for example, and then resigned from their position only to be reappointed to the legislature so that they could double dip. I think that would be a little harder now that we've instituted the reform of the special election for folks who resign. But that's something that needs to be looked at, certainly by the Ethics Committee of the county. These costs just cannot continue to go unchecked, and I really think that you need to take action. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Next we have Faye Gudakis from East State Street, Ithaca.
Faye Gudakis, I reside in the city of Ithaca. I'm sure all of you know now that we have a new law in our books starting November 1st. It says here in an article in the Ithaca Journal, which was put on 6A on Friday, this past Friday, under the law that prohibits texting while behind the wheel, drivers will only receive fines for using portable electronic devices if they're pulled over for violating another law. The maximum fine is $150. Now, yes, it's great that this law now is going to be, you know, enforced November 1st. What is there a problem with this law? It is in the Ithaca Journal today, in the editorial. It's not strong enough. Why is it not strong enough? Because somehow you have to be doing some other violation in order to be fined. A child could write this. There's no logic to this. If you're going to stop texting while driving, then you fine it. Then that's the reason why you're stopped. That's the reason why you get fined. Not because there's another violation. Now, when I was here last time, you, for example, said, well, we're waiting for the state to come out with their law. Well, I had heard that the state was going to come out with a weak law. But putting that aside, the state now has a very weak law. So what are we in Tompkins County going to do about it? Are we going to sit back and say, well, we have this weak law and there's nothing we can do about it? Or are we going to put our energy forward and do what other counties have done already and pass their own laws? We need to, number one, find out whether or not we can pass a stricter law in Tompkins County and see if that could override the state law. Okay? We need to do that, not wait for somebody else to do that. Okay? If we're going to be progressive, enlightened, and talk about sustainability, then that's what we do. Otherwise, we're hypocritical. Because every day when I'm on my bicycle or when I'm walking, I see this. Every day. So you can't say that local enforcement will then turn around and tell you it's not enforceable. Okay? Because I also want a community town meeting with local law enforcement about this issue. Number two, when this was in the Ithaca Journal on Friday on page 6, I went on the phone and I called a lot of people. Schumer's office, Hinchey's office, Weiner's office. I called the Ithaca Journal. Apparently, you know, they said they've done enough articles on this. I don't think so. But in any case, the reason I'm saying this to you is Elmira had the law posted on the front page. There was an article on the front page on Friday in Elmira's paper. And why? Because people there care about it. So what I'm going to ask you to do tonight, and anybody listening to this, is to call the Ithaca Journal and tell them, you want this law posted on their paper the day that it starts getting enforced. Okay? Or a couple of days prior, so people in Ithaca know that this is going to be going into effect. Because I've already spoken to people who don't know diddly squat that it's happened. As a community, we have shown no commitment, except for a few of you that I know on the board that care. But it has to be a community that posts this advertising. Talk about the budget. You fill that in. You put that in the budget. You have billboards. You're entering Tompkins County. There's no cell phone use and no texting while driving. You put that in the paper. You make sure the Daily Sun puts it in their paper. There are ways to do this, which brings the momentum out there the way we have the Ithaca car share publicity out there. Okay, somehow we're so worried. Oh, we want to save oil. We want to save gas. That's fine. But we also want to make our streets safe. And somehow Tompkins County, okay, and the people that live here and the people that govern it have a disconnect. Okay, you want to save gas, you don't want to invade another country for oil, then you also have to take responsibility on a local level and not do this behavior, which is found to be extremely dangerous. So I'm begging you, and I'm asking you, and it is within your hands, you know, to govern this, okay? And it's not a bad thing. And I also want to take a moment to thank Julie Kiefer, who was the only one on the county board last time, who thanked me for coming here, okay? And I thank her for all her good work, because all of you should be just as passionate and care just as much and get on the phone and make the phone calls that you need to make this a stronger law and to make it a public issue in our county. Thank you.
Thank you, Faye. Next we have Paul Mazzarella.
Good afternoon. I'm Paul Mazzarella, Executive Director of Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services. I'd like to briefly report on several new initiatives that INHS is undertaking here in Tompkins County. For many people, INHS is best known for the work that we do in buying dilapidated houses, fixing them up, and selling them to low-income homeowners. We've completed about 150 of those projects, and they've made a really big difference in downtown Ithaca. In recent years, however, we've significantly changed our focus, and now we're addressing the issue of housing need here in Tompkins County by building new construction units for both owners and renters. Many of you are aware that the county's recent affordable housing needs assessment called for the development of about 3,000 new housing units here in Tompkins County, and I'm pleased to say that we're trying to work towards helping us meet that goal. Today, INHS has 112 units under construction or in pre-development, and all of those will be either for rental or owner-occupied housing. The total development cost of these is about $24 million, and of those, only two of them are renovation projects. So that's an example of how we've really changed our focus. Another thing that we've done recently is really embrace the notion that affordable housing has to be sustainable, both environmentally and financially for people. We've really embraced the idea of green development, and all of our projects that we're building have various aspects of green built into them. For example, right now we have 11 new single-family homes under construction. All of them will be certified as either LEED Gold or LEED Platinum when they're completed. And these are only a handful of the LEED certified affordable homes in the country. We've also promoted the idea of permanent affordability through our Community Housing Trust, and all of the homes that INHS builds and sells from now on will be sold under this Community Housing Trust model, in which the land and the buildings are separated and those homes remain permanently affordable to low-income buyers. The last initiative I wanted to talk about is our expansion of services throughout Tompkins County. About 3 years ago, we started making energy loans with NYSERDA to all homeowners in Tompkins County, and this program has become wildly successful. We've helped about 150 homeowners significantly improve energy conservation in their home. And along the way, we discovered that a lot of those homeowners also need other kinds of help with standard energy or non-energy related work, like a new roof or upgrade of their electrical system. So we found new sources of money that allow us to make standard rehab loans throughout Tompkins County, and that program is now in place. A question that a lot of people ask me is, how does this expansion effort relate to what Better Housing for Tompkins County is doing? Many people consider INHS and Better Housing to be mirror images of programs simply working in different areas. And while we do share many similarities, there are also many differences. INHS has different sources of money, we have different training for our staff, and we have different program values and methods of doing the things that we do. The one thing that we've attempted to do, and I think we're following through completely in this expansion, is one, we do not duplicate the work that Better Housing is doing. And second, when INHS does add programs in Tompkins County, it's in response to unmet needs. I think it's safe to say that both Better Housing and INHS share many program goals, but neither of us have the resources to fully meet the needs of Tompkins County. So both of us are out there trying to serve the needs of low-income people. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak on the privilege of the floor for the public? If not, we'll move on to privilege of the floor for legislators. Jim Dennis, and then Pam.
Thank you, Michael. Over the past weekend, I had the opportunity to observe the passing of Senator Kennedy and the way it was done by local media, or by media, national media. And it struck me as something that was pretty close to me in a sense that the first person I voted for in 1960 was the older brother, and then voted again for Robert. And being a lifelong Democrat, what occurred to me, or what I thought of when Senator Kennedy died, was a man who was able to survive all of that, granted had some personal problems that he dealt with, but he stayed true to his goal of his family, that he was a fortunate person and looked out for the less fortunate through thousands of pieces of legislation in the Congress of the United States. I grew up in a family that was my father was a staunch Republican, and my mother was a very liberal New York Democrat who thought Franklin Roosevelt was next to the Pope in his ability to do things. And when Kennedy was elected president, she thought that was just going to be the beginning of something really remarkable, and it was for a short time, but it changed, as you all know, and we ended up, you know, Senator Kennedy, Ed Kennedy became the last of the line to do things, and I just wanted to mention how important I think he was to the United States of America and all the things that he was able to accomplish in his nearly 50 years as a legislator.
Thank you, Jim. Pam?
Well, I agree with Jim. I was actually very touched by the what went on this weekend and the reflection that took place. However, my comments tonight are more towards the present and future, and my favorite topic of garbage truck regulations. The governor's office has, as I said the last time, has put forth the proposed regulations. There is a 45-day comment period. The comment period ends on October 9th. There are three ways that people are encouraged to send their comments, and I believe that you have them on your TV screen. I hope so. The preferred way is the email, but you also may mail them a letter or call them. I wanted to make just to spend a minute on the. There seems to be some confusion about the 25-mile part of their calculations when they were setting up the roads that they were going to exclude, and the basically the 25-mile. A calculation was whether it was longer for a truck to drive north on 81 and across on 20 to get to Seneca Meadows or to make that triangle than it would be to go from Whitney Point and then up 89, 96, or whatever the road is, to the same point. And the calculation was that it was less than 25 miles longer for them to go up 81 and across on 20. So that was the basis on which they excluded the road, certainly in Tompkins County, the 89, 96, and 79. So if this is an issue that is affecting you, please, please, please make your voice heard in Albany. This it's a really important time for people to do something. This is our moment to have an impact on what's going on in our region with these increasing numbers of garbage trucks. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. And Will, and then Martha.
Nope.
Martha.
Thank you, Pam. A question first about trucks related to gas drilling are not part of this because they're like if they're going to a drill site. They're on whatever the local road is because that's called local traffic, right?
Yes, that's right. If they have business, any truck, farm truck, anything. I'm sorry, Mike. May I answer that?
Yes, sure.
Any farm truck, any unfortunately for us, any gas drilling truck that is has local business, they have the ability to use the state highways.
And local roads. And that's one of the concerns with the Marcellus Shale gas drilling, which will use so much water. I'll just echo something that Marie McCray, she's a Dryden resident, has written in the paper that if people are worried about the garbage trucks, you ain't seen nothing yet when it comes to the trucks related to gas drilling. So
I might just say one more thing. Is that they this reg, these regulations don't these you know they apply to inner without trucks with no business in the area. The county has some serious control over what happens on our county roads. So I think that that's where we need to focus, and certainly most people have to go through on county roads before they get to town roads. So we're hoping that, that we can have some impact there.
All right, and to finish up, and then one other comment. I was talking today to a staff person of Senator David Valesky, Troy Wofner. He apparently is working on gas drilling issues for Senator Valesky. And basically, I was asking for him to set up a meeting with as high as he can get in state government with anybody who wants to come along to talk about these issues. I'm very concerned that the folks in Albany leading our state government are not really aware of how this movement will affect Tompkins County and the rest of the southern tier, although they may be aware because there is a bill pending in the state Senate that would exempt, that would prohibit Marcellus Shale gas drilling from the New York City watershed. So I said that to Mr. Wofner. I pointed that out. I said, that's very, he said, yeah, I'm aware of that bill. I said, well, I find that interesting. If the New York City watershed should be protected against hydrofracking drilling, why isn't that good enough for the rest of us? So I'll let you know if we get a meeting set up. I just want to mention that tomorrow evening, 7:30 in DeWitt Park, will be a vigil for the public health care option now, and I would encourage people to attend. It's being sponsored by the local Move On Council. And we just want to send a message to the notices. Will help us send a message to Congress. We need a public health care option now. Help get the word to Representatives Arcuri, Hinchey, and Massa. And I would add Schumer and Gillibrand. So 7:30 in DeWitt Park tomorrow evening.
Thank you, Martha. Frank Proto?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. A couple of announcements first. I'm going to keep reminding you about the watch fire in Lansing at the Myers Point, September the 18th. If you have any tattered American flags that you'd like destroyed, they will do it at that time. This is sponsored by a number of veterans groups locally, particularly the Vietnam chapter that's here in Tompkins County, 377. In that same vein, October 3rd is the monument rededication in DeWitt Park. If any of you would like to attend, you're all welcome, of course. That's a Saturday, and the county's been very active in helping clean those monuments up. The local bricklayers union finished their work, and they've restored three or four very large areas. The city was generous in donating the pavers for that, and the bricklayers union just finished that. The painters union is actually doing the caulking on a lot of the monuments now with the cleanup, so there's been a lot of community cooperation on that. I want to remind you too, put my hat on as the county's Water Resources Council chairman. I've been in touch with Barbara Lifton's office. Some of you heard last week that Commissioner Granis was on the verge of approving the extended comment period for the comment period for the SGEIS that will be arriving at some point. What I heard was they had extended it to 90 days.
Yes.
Now, what I since have found out, and Barbara's sending me a copy of Granis's letter, it's that he's considering extending it substantially, but there's no date in the letter. There are some things that are of concern, and one of them certainly is that no one has seen this tome yet. The plan is still to get it out by the end of September, and we have a lot of groups locally poised to take a section of it and review it, not the least of which are some of our own advisory boards. So as soon as we can pin this down, I mean, one of us certainly will let the rest of you know. I mean, the media probably will know before us. But the concern is that we absolutely need more than the 30 days that was originally proposed, and it looks like we're going to have more time to do that. And Jim, I appreciate what you said about Senator Kennedy. Some of us grew up in that era as well, and remember his brother very well.
Thank you, Frank. Carol Chalk.
I just want to mention, this is about gas drilling. I had occasion to be in an airplane 35,000 feet above the nation, and I'm not sure exactly what state we were over. I assume it was Colorado or southern Wyoming. And it was just past the Rockies. And I looked down out of the window of the airplane. I have not been an alarmist about gas drilling. I have been a proponent of taking a reasoned approach to looking at how do we protect Tompkins County from any excesses or environmental effects, or how do we make sure that the taxpayer is not footing the bill for the extra wear and tear on our roads? What are the reasoned approaches that we can take to protect our county while not necessarily putting a kibosh on economic development in this area? And I looked out the window of the airplane, and there was a very odd landscape. There were huge patches, frequent huge patches, with a pattern almost like the branches of a tree with many leaves. And I thought, oh, this is odd. Do people need, for reasons of fire, fighting fires, to clear that much brush around their houses? They were such huge bare patches, and they were so frequent, I thought they must be houses. And I looked more closely, and I thought, well, no, there are some other houses out there and some other narrower bands along the hillsides that seem to be roads. And these were very wide, bare patches. And as I looked, it just struck me that this was almost a landscape like another planet, like the moon, if it had a little bit of green with huge bare patches. And all of a sudden I realized these are gas drilling pads. To confirm my suspicions, I looked as the plane kept going a little bit along and found another area that was a very similar terrain that did not have these similar patches, and that where you could see evidence of houses and roads along the hillside that was a normal pattern of houses and roads. I just was appalled at how frequent. I will try to get a satellite picture of this because it was so bizarre, and it was the first that I felt in my gut the real impact that we could experience here, and realized what it must have been 25 to 40 acres is what we're talking about, how often that is. It's not just a little site across the hillside from your home. It is many, many sites that changes the landscape outside of our beautiful terrain. Just want to mention that.
Thank you, Carol. If there is no further comments, Frank, quickly.
Mike, I'm sorry. Could I have one more bite at the apple?
Briefly.
I want to go back to Pam's comments about the trucking. Pam, that the email that I sent you, did you all catch that? The email that I sent Pam with regard to the trucking, the agricultural piece is of concern. a lot of those are not, it's not a produce truck delivering produce to Wegmans. A lot of it is somebody who's grown corn or grain or whatever it is in at one extent of our county or the next county, and they're trucking it to be processed, and it's going to a processing plant, and they're using tractor trailers. They may be passing through, but there may be no natural hookup to the state highway system that you described. The Farm Bureau and the Ag and Farmland Protection Board are looking at that now to see what kind of an effect it will have on our region. And as soon as we get something back, I'll let you know. But I want to dispel any item that these trucks are not, it's not like the truck you see with Ithaca produce on the side running around delivering vegetables to or even going to the farmer's market. It's more extensive than that. And that's why some of the folks in agriculture are a little concerned, because they haven't gotten their answers to their questions yet. So that's the only reason I wanted to bring that up to you the other day.
Thank you, Frank.
Thanks for all the work you've done on that, really.
Thank you, Frank. If there's no further comments from legislators, we have a special presentation from our community advisory panel. I think we have four representatives from that panel with us tonight. And I think you've gotten a copy of that, both electronically and in paper. I think John Newman will start us off. Welcome.
Michael, we talked about the possibility of speaking from the front mic or the back. Does it matter for you?
The front is fine if that works for you. I'll just say quickly that we have another report being given up to us tonight, which was 7 months of work, and is this thick. And here's the 4 months of work for a community advisory panel. So thank you for your conciseness.
Is there a lesson there? Good evening. I'm John Newman, a town of Ithaca resident, and I'm a member of the community advisory panel formed this year by this legislature. And it was comprised of 8 community members, 2 legislators, Jim Dennis and Michael Kaplink-Alaire, and also 5 senior staff. So it was a joint assessment effort of community and government. Among the members of this, the community members here tonight, sitting in the back at the moment, are Joanne Florino, Hank DeLay, and Andy Sharaba. As you well know, earlier this year, the CAP was formed to assess and make recommendations relative to the budgeting process and policies of this group. The last time a CAP was formed was actually 5 years ago, 2004. And many of those recommendations have either been fully implemented or partially so. And we have been encouraged to see that in our review. And a copy of the full report, I think, is not only in front of you, but it was distributed last week. My intention tonight is not to go through the report and read to you every word, but simply to highlight some of the few more key findings in our judgment, and I will do so now. First, the current reality. As you already know, we are unquestionably in a period of extraordinary challenges. For you as a legislature, as well as the entire community, and that this is likely to continue for many years. This is not just the summer and fall and spring of this year. Just a few to mention real quickly. The economy is unquestionably in a recession. The federal and New York state governments are pulling back funding to local governments, and at the same time are seeking to increase their taxation overall. The overall employment in this county generally is continuing to decline as businesses and other organizations are aggressively trimming jobs or just leaving the area or just leaving the state. Local consumer spending has declined and may not fully recover for quite some time. And the costs of this county's government are escalating in several key categories and presenting even more challenging issues to you. And we all know that important community needs for several crucial human services that are provided by the county continue to increase in these times, for all of the organizations that provide these services, not just governmental. The ability of this county's residents, on the other hand, and the taxed organizations in this county to fund ever higher taxes has significantly decreased. And this government is not the only entity trying to, at the local, state, and federal level, trying to increase the levy on the seriously struggling local taxpayers. I'd like you to note that in a recent study, it was pointed out that for decades, of course, and this is not news, New York State, broadly speaking, has been creating increasing economic difficulties through well-intentioned incremental increases in spending. But a very serious negative consequence has come from these increments. And New York State now ranks, the state now ranks next to the bottom of all 50 states in its unfavorable tax environment for businesses and with depressing effects on sustainable employment, which we all hope to return to at some point. All in all, this is a perfect storm of adverse factors. And they are expected to follow, we believe, as a community advisory panel in the years ahead by what we might call a sea change. We will not be returning in 2010, 11, and 12 to what we have seen in previous years. There are some very important structural and economic changes at work. Now, you have accomplished, as a group, a great deal in recent years. If we go back to a five-year period from 99 to 04, the costs of Thompson County's government increased 460% faster than the cost of living index increased. 460% faster than the cost of living increase. In the last 5 years, up to this year, it has increased just 30% faster than the cost of living increase. We recognize, of course, that cost control is not the only key measure of what you do and what the county does. But this county's recent record in this cost management is a meaningful accomplishment and is fully appreciated by residents and businesses who are paying the tax burdens. Yet we also believe that the ever-increasing cost of living in our county and in this state has had a depressing effect on the age and economic diversity of our communities. And we view the age and economic diversity as an extremely important element of the quality of life in Tompkins County. The affordability, we believe, has been stretched to the point where there are people who are either stopping, considering moving here, or are here and are thinking about moving away. Do note that in a recent study, it stated that upstate New York local governments, local taxes in the local governments, are 55% higher than the national average at the local level. In New York State, that means upstate is shouldering a $4.2 billion burden by not being average for the country in what we're spending relative to per capita is the way this has been calculated. So we believe now in three areas are the areas of emphasis and focus by this group going forward is our recommendation. The first is in the area of programs. Perpetuating programs that no longer have what may have been a high benefit relative to costs cannot continue. The county can't afford anymore each and every single one of its programs. And as you know, there are many, some of which provide services similar or identical to those of other organizations in the county. In some cases, these services could be done by more active cooperation or partnerships or subcontracting with others. Reducing or eliminating lower priority programs, of course, has negative effects. We know that. But continuing to use ever more limited resources to maintain them also has serious effects and drains away funds that could be used to bolster more important services. So it's a question of priority and allocations and emphasis. mandated programs must not be viewed as off-limits for containment or cost reduction actions. For example, many mandates just don't specify how to do the mandate. It just has to be done. This leaves considerable latitude for creative improvements in efficiency and effectiveness. As the state may drop its funding support for some mandated services, reducing those services should be a far better option than replacing those state dollars with local dollars. The second area is people. The county has to find ways to reduce the total cost of its personnel expenses, the largest single cost area. Just in pension alone, and we had comments earlier on the pension burden, the 7% increase this year is likely to increase by more than 300% by the year 2012. Over the next few years, it's believed that a combination of health and pension cost increases could yield an additional $13 billion burden on this county alone. Even if salaries and wages were frozen, and of course they won't be, and they shouldn't be. Now, if attrition is used as a primary means of reducing the number of employees, work tasks and processes have to be redesigned if that's what's being used to better align the skills and backgrounds that remain on staff. Reliance on attrition works best if the staff is more flexibly cross-trained. And that is an even more important need now, as the more humane attrition could be and should be one of the primary ways in which you address these high labor costs. Lean office or right-sizing types of initiatives in use by others are clearly called for to better rationalize the tasks and processes of the organization, yielding more valuable output and more valuable services per unit of employee cost. A goal of 27 fewer positions, just for example, just picking 27, by next year, that would be 3.5% of the workforce, as difficult as that may be, would only bring the full-time equivalents down to a relatively high 2006 level. And 2006 was a continuing increase from the past. More of this has to be done going forward. Finally, of the third partnerships, we are very pleased by the solid progress in the Health Benefits Coalition being managed by the Tompkins County Council of Governments. This needs to be built upon, and we encourage many more shared services and expenditures discussions to include more local entities, school districts, TC3, Cornell, Ithaca College, TCAT, and so on, as appropriate. Overall, we believe that Tompkins County Legislature is now at a point where it can lead the way in a very, in a current, very difficult environment. We would like to see this county become broadly known for smart, instigative, yet sensitive management of the tough trade-offs between the desire for services that are really important and crucial and a trade-off against what is truly affordable given the economic environment. Should I have missed any important points that my colleagues in the back from a part of the CAP, I would like them to bring them forward right now and mention them out loud. And if not, we're all available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank the panel. This is substantive. It's a good frame as we're about to get our own budget recommendation for 2010. And I think we'll take it very seriously. It's not just for 2010, but it will continue on with our deliberations. Any questions, Martha?
Thank you, John, and thank you, panel members. I appreciate the study that you've gone through and the report. I was able to get to the first one of your meetings, and it was clear you were in for a serious work sessions on that, and I appreciate that. I think we all appreciate it. I really appreciate also the very moderate and measured tone of the report. I made notes that of all the things that we're already doing among the list here, maybe hadn't been doing when you were meeting, but things that are already underway. For one thing, I noticed on page 8, you talk about reducing the workforce by 3.5% to bring us to 745 FTEs. I believe we're already below that right now at 732 or 736. Keep mixing up those numbers, Joe. Is it which one?
Actually employed today, it's, I think, 736.
So not that by definition that's a badge of accomplishment, but the point is that we are, you know, this is our department heads and all our staff are already well on the way. I have a question. I don't know if, John, if you can, who can answer this. Mike Lane raised a very important point about the structure of the retirement program, which is kind of breathtaking when you look at those numbers. It occurs to me that Tier 5 for new employees, even if we could get that done, is really a slow way to reform this whole thing. Now, nothing against employees who have been working here longer than 10 years, but my understanding is if you've been here 10 years or more, you don't have to pay any more into the retirement program, correct? Would it require a constitutional amendment to change that, too? I think that's something that most other employees who are working, you know, pay into retirement as long as they're working. So is that something that would require a constitutional amendment to change?
We certainly take action by the state, whether it's negotiated or amendment, I'm not sure.
Is it something that we could we perhaps negotiate differential wage increases for employees who are on either side of that mark? If you're working high, if you've been here longer than 10 years and therefore not essentially getting higher benefits than the employees who've been here less than 10. I mean, I'm just going to throw that out there. Maybe don't need an answer, but I wonder if that's something we could, on our own, negotiate when we sit down with our own unions.
That's just a comment we'll leave there because there's history on all that. I saw Dooley Keeper's hand.
Yes, thank you. I thought this was very well written and easy to read. I appreciated that. I have a question on page 10. Where one of the service delivery alternatives mentioned is explore expanded use of local not-for-profits. And one of my concerns has always been that although we already make good use of local not-for-profits, the wages that they're able to pay in many instances are lower than we think they should be. And to hand off yet more seems as though you might not be helping the community as much as it sounds, and I wondered if you all discussed that.
Someone want to contribute from the back? Yes, Joanne.
I think I raised that
issue. Joanne, can you use the mic?
Okay.
Thank you.
I know I raised that issue because certainly we see a lot of those agency budgets at the foundation. I think it is true that the agencies have been encouraged by funders, by the Human Services Coalition, and by others to, you know, try to get those wages up as much as possible. And the one thing I will say is that pushes some of the burden off on private donors who have remained incredibly generous in this county. And I'm not talking just about organized funders like the foundations or the charitable gift fund. I am talking about individual donors who came through last year for United Way. I didn't hear one agency tell me they'd had huge falling off of donations last year. And I really think that that's where some of this has to, the responsibility for making sure that there are good, fair wages in the nonprofits really rests with the boards of those nonprofits. And we've certainly encouraged in our grant making boards to look at those wages to make sure that, in fact, we're not creating to situations where people who work for those agencies, in fact, have to, you know, take food stamps, can't afford health insurance, and to do the right thing and have more full-time workers, not do the, you know, everybody's working less than 24 hours and we don't have to pay benefits. This is, however, a responsibility that I still think is best left to the private sector. So where we saw programs, and we all see them on a regular basis, where local nonprofits are working in conjunction with the county, or side-by-side with the county, we think that there probably are places where those nonprofit agencies can be used in a more effective way, understanding the concern about low wages. And I completely agree with you, Dooley. I think it would be unfair to push the burden off to people who may still remain some sort of burden to the public taxpayer in other ways if they're really not, you know, making the kind of wages that you need to live in Tompkins County. At the same time, they're also taxpayers in Tompkins County. And I don't think we can ignore that. And that is definitely a concern that I'm hearing more and more from people who are on fixed wages, who have had hours reduced, that, you know, they really, even though we say our county taxes are not the biggest part of our tax burden, every increase now is becoming one more increment that just drives another nail in the coffin. So, you know, in trying to weigh all of those concerns, this was certainly one approach that we thought was at least worth exploring. I don't think it's going to be an across-the-board thing, but where there are agencies that have been good and solid and effective partners for the county, I think we should look to them a little bit more.
Thank you, Joanne. Any further questions? Carol?
Yeah. Thanks to the whole panel for doing the work that you did. It really, it's a big job to be looking at this whole question. And I appreciated and was encouraged by the fact that you found that the county had been so measured in the things that we've done and successful in the kinds of long-range budgeting that we've been able to implement. But in some ways, that's a very depressing notion to look at because those are the things that that if we hadn't done yet would be easier to do now. So it leaves some more difficult cost cutting. I have a question about whether you looked at the phenomenon. I have a perception, and I think that our department heads seem to indicate this, but I want to know if you looked at this question and if you found anything about it. The perception that state and federal programs from which we get grant and other assistance, whether they're mandated or non-mandated, are requiring ever-increasing amounts of work, administrative work, for the dollars that we get, both in the applications for the funding, in the size of the pieces of the funding that you get per application, and then in the reporting requirements that seem to necessitate that we keep larger and larger staffs on board just to stay where we are in terms of getting that funding. Is that something you looked at or that you have any sense of?
In the back. We did, but not as specifically as you are wording it at the moment. It turns out it's another type of mandate, kind of under the radar mandate, to ask for these additional administrative tasks and filings and paperwork and so on relative to some of the services that are basically not funded. The money has to come from someplace to fund the staff. I would like to kind of combine a little bit with Martha's earlier very excellent question relative to where you've gotten with attrition and pulling staff back, which is actually further than when we started the cap a few months ago. Two things. One is we believe, and I think numbers prove this out, that this is not a time to try to stop that process. The second is, as vacancies occur through natural attrition, somebody retiring, somebody moving away, that doesn't mean the work they were doing goes away. And there is, in effect, a pent-up demand, and in some cases, an urgent demand to fill certain positions and start to backfill. And one of the things that has to be done is in our recommendation is some form of reorganization process, redesign, work task design, so that you in fact can take the workload down, not just the FTEs, because they both have got to be in balance, or you're just working people to death, and that's not right either. And so the leadership for that can easily come from the legislature, who insists on those kinds of steps being taken.
Well, again, I thank the panel. I think that some of these recommendations actually made their way into Joe's recommendations, even the comment he just made, and we'll be paying attention both throughout this budget process but in the future years. Jim, you have a comment at budget
chair? Yes. I want to individually thank the panel and also the staff who worked very hard on this, the new county administrator and Paula and all the names that were mentioned. I went to these meetings, and I actually got a pretty good, I got some good props in this thing. It said, I chaired the meetings and provided guidance and leadership. And that's not true. What I did very well, chaired the meetings, I think, but I listened fairly well because these people were the people who we asked to come, and they have a view of the community that some of us may have, but certainly I don't have. And they offered many things, and it was really interesting for me because I was not involved in the initial CAP, but this one came along, and they were able to talk about the old days and clearly talk about the new days that are facing us. So I appreciate their work, and I know the community will.
Thank you, Jim. We're going to move on to the chair's report. I just want to welcome back. This is an educational community, and welcome back students, welcome back faculty, and others who are re-engaging in the educational process, although it's year-round, I know. And I also wanted to make a quick note that we have changed our quilt up here. The History Center has brought us a new offering. I haven't actually read the detail, but give kudos to our History Center for giving us fresh history right in our midst. I have no chair's appointments. What's that? Oh, excuse me. I have from Workforce Investment Board chair's appointments. These are terms that expire June 30th, 2012. Patrick McKee, Carl Haynes, Leslie Leonard, Brenda Myers, Mike Talarski, Alan Peterson, and Mike Stamm. And now we'll move on to our report from our county administrator, Joe Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to spend my time on the agenda tonight to give a brief overview of the tentative 2010 budget that has been distributed today to the legislators. That's one of the large documents on your desk tonight. It will also be available to the public through our webpage, I think right after this meeting, so the public will have an opportunity to review the document that we will be talking about tonight. I will be giving prepared remarks tonight that will follow very closely to the budget message, which is a relatively new feature in the budget, the first few pages of the budget. And I will follow along pretty closely with that, although hopefully in a more condensed manner. And I will also say that we will present a much more detailed presentation at the Expanded Budget Committee on September 9th. As I begin my prepared remarks, which I think will run about 15 or 20 minutes, I'd like to remind everyone of a couple simple points that explain a very complex financial plan.
And I'll just quickly say, if people are feeling held hostage back there, they can actually slip out. They don't have to sit around for the whole thing if they don't want to. But go ahead, Jeff.
It makes it sound like this is a burdensome experience.
Not at all. I just saw people.
just a couple of simple points to explain a very complex document. First, more than any other level of local government, counties in New York State are especially hard hit by a recession. When times are bad, the demand for human services that we're mandated to provide goes up, and sales tax revenue available to pay for those services goes down. Second, the recommended budget is all about the economy. The difficult budget actions we need to take this year are not a reflection of a government that has been living beyond its means, or that's wastful or inefficient, or that's chosen to provide services that are nice to do but not essential. In fact, we are the opposite of that. This government is lean, productive, and focused on services that respond to the real needs of our community. That makes our decisions about this budget extraordinarily difficult because we're not trimming fat. We're trying hard to adapt to a bad economy that's driven our costs up and our revenues down. It's important to understand the economy that we're in, beginning with unemployment. In a community that's often been sheltered from the effects of economic downturns, Tompkins County's unemployment rate now stands at 6.3%. That's better than the rest of the state and the nation, but still at a high water mark for this community. The consequences of that sharp increase in unemployment ripple throughout our expenses and our revenues. The decline in the stock market, precipitated by the collapse of the housing market, reflects an enormous loss in our national wealth, diminishing the value of everything from 401k retirement plans to large institutional endowments. Investment losses, in turn, can lead to everything from cutbacks by our largest employers to an individual's decision to hold off a little while longer to buy a car. Again, those decisions have a direct effect on our budget. And with its revenues falling to the floor and its expenses still scaled to a robust economy that doesn't exist anymore, New York State is struggling to keep its budget in balance, using one-time stimulus money today but facing enormous gaps tomorrow. In the state budget that was approved in April, the county suffered $830,000 in cuts in state aid. We're dealing with those cuts in the 2010 budget. But after just one quarter of the new fiscal year, the state says it's already $2.1 billion in the red and that mid-year cuts are needed. The long-term prognosis, as you can see, is even worse. The State Division of Budget is projecting an $18 billion gap within the next 2 years, and that assumes the recovery will take root next year. It's not good news for New York's counties. When the state cuts its budget, it often means shifting its costs from the state budget to county budgets. It's not hard to see the effects of the economic downturn on our budget. They hit us in the form of declining revenues, rising human service mandates, and rapidly escalating pension costs. We've talked this year at length about the sales tax, maybe ad nauseum. They're down $2 million from our 2009 budget target. The recommended 2010 budget assumes that we've hit the low point of consumer spending and that growth will return next year. However, even assuming growth of 3.7%, the 2010 sales tax budget will still be $1 million less than we budgeted in 2009. The million-dollar drop in sales tax revenue is the single most significant factor in the entire proposed budget. Our mandated expenditures, over which we have little or no control, continue to rise and put pressure on our taxpayers. Even assuming, as we are, that temporary assistance caseloads will plateau at today's high levels, other mandates such as legal aid to the indigent and preschool special education are still rising by double digits. The total budget for mandated programs, excluding the one-time federal stimulus savings in our Medicaid program, is up by $1 million in 2010, and I'll talk about the stimulus money in a minute. Pensions, and this is a recurring theme tonight, pensions are the third and perhaps most concerning major source of budget pressure. As we discuss this rapid rise of pension costs, we have to begin with a clear understanding that the county and its unions do not control or negotiate pensions. Our employees aren't greedy, and we're not bad negotiators. By the terms of their employment in local government, county employees are members of a single state and local public employees' retirement system. The state decides benefit levels, the structure of the plan, and who pays what. As an employer, our only role is to pay the bill the state sends us. With the collapse of the stock market, the state pension fund lost $45 billion, or 26% of its value, over the past year. Pension costs that had been paid with investment earnings will now be shifted to employers. In 2009, this year, the pension rate for Tier 4 employees, which is most of our workforce, is about 7% of their earnings. In 2010, that contribution will rise from 7% to over 11%. That jump in pension contributions adds $1.2 million to our budget, about $800,000 of which is paid with local dollars. That's the largest single increase among all of our expenses. Now, if the state budget office is right, pension contributions will rise from 11% in 2010 to 17.9% in 2011, and then again to over 24% of payroll in 2012. So even if we work our way out of this recession, these steep increases in our pension costs will claim substantial resources that are otherwise available for county programs for several years to come. These three areas alone, the sales tax mandates and pension costs, explain most of the pressure on our budget. When the budget process began this spring with the setting of a tax levy goal and spending targets, the general approach aimed for balance. Spending targets assumed that half of a $4.8 million gap was to be addressed through $2.4 million in revenue actions, including a $1.1 million levy increase and $1.3 million in either new revenue or applied reserves. The other $2.4 million was to come from reductions in non-mandated expenditures. It was also assumed that the budget for salaries and wages would remain constant in 2010, requiring any increase to be offset by decreases. The recommended budget that you have before you tonight follows that strategy nearly to the letter. On the revenue side of the budget recommends a 3% increase in the property tax levy, generating $1.1 million in new revenue. The budget also recommends two new revenue sources that will ultimately generate nearly $1.3 million in annual recurring county revenue. First, the 65-cent per month increase in the emergency communications landline surcharge that would generate an estimated $250,000 a year that would be dedicated to support the cost of our emergency communication system. As you all well know, the budget has the increase has been authorized by the state and is awaiting action by the county. This budget assumes the surcharge, which has been, again, authorized by the state, will be enacted in time for a January 1st implementation. Second, the budget proposes a 0.25% increase in the mortgage recording tax, which is paid by borrowers in real estate transactions. That tax would generate an estimated $900,000 to $1 million annually. But because the mortgage tax hasn't yet been considered by the county legislature, this is a new introduction, or authorized by the state, the tentative budget applies about $1 million of our fund balance to serve as a placeholder while we consider this new recurring revenue source. Our departments all submitted budgets that were within their target, resulting in a $2.3 million reduction in spending. And as indicated, the budget for salaries and wages assumes no net growth in 2010. Many, but by no means all of the reductions, were requested for restorations by the departments through the over-target request process. Without the means to pay them, the tentative budget does not include most of the OTRs. I've recommended only $700,000 of the $2.4 million of OTRs that were submitted by the departments. To free up resources to fund these OTRs, I've recommended several things. First, a $290,000 reduction in our annual paving program, a $233,000 reduction in contingency funds that had been paid for prisoner board outs, and because of the variance, we should be relieved of that cost. And I've also proposed to unfund our $45,000 contribution to the Municipal Summer Youth Employment Program. These changes have been made in consultation with the affected department heads. The budget also includes $900,000 in OTRs for capital programs and projects that have typically been funded with one-time dollars through the OTR process. I have also initiated several OTRs, including funding for a new lean office training program that's modeled on the successful efforts at TC3 to streamline its operations that John Newman just spoke about, and supplemental funding for our deferred maintenance program that would be significantly diminished within the target budget. Like most other governments, much of our budget consists of labor costs. To reduce the budget, we've had to reduce these costs. The workforce level supported by the 2010 budget will be 3.4% smaller than budgeted in 2009. The number of full-time equivalent positions will decline by 26, from 779 FTEs in 2009 to 753 in 2010. Most of that reduction is the result of reducing the work week of several employees and unfunding positions that are currently vacant. As the year has gone on, department heads have been careful about filling only the most essential positions. There will be layoffs that are required by this budget. However, the management of natural attrition has helped us lower the number of those layouts to 6. Overall, this budget requires cuts in nearly every area of our operations. Some of those cuts are very deep, and all of those cuts will hurt. With respect to risks, and there are risks in this budget, the recommended budget is based on conditions as they exist today or are understood today. As we've quickly learned over the past year, conditions can change very quickly, and it seems rarely for the better. There are risks taken in this budget that we need to acknowledge and then try to manage. The 2010 budget assumes the economy will begin to recover next year. It assumes the sales tax revenues that are tied to that are set at 3.7% above the most current projection of 2009 receipts. The budget assumes no further cut in state aid. This is far and away the largest risk factor in the entire budget. The Department of Social Services has projected temporary assistance caseload levels leveling off at today's very elevated level. This may prove optimistic if joblessness remains high. Finally, the budget does assume wage and salary stability. With all of the county's bargaining units currently or without a contract next year, this is going to require disciplined and creative negotiations. In light of these substantial risks, the proposed budget holds aside the final $1 million installment of our Medicaid savings from the federal stimulus, the FMAP, allowing this one-time revenue to be available to help offset losses that may occur later in the year and elsewhere in our budget. There are policy issues raised by this budget. The largest policy issue in any budget is the obvious one, whether this budget aligns with the legislature's priorities, and that's what you will take the next several months to determine. Beyond that, the tentative budget raises several policy issues that you will deal with in the coming weeks, including the major issues such as the proposed diversification of revenues that are in the tentative budget. Policy decisions will also be sought for issues as diverse as whether COFA should move into the Human Services Building as opposed to rented space, new deadlines for the payment of delinquent taxes, the extent of our support that we offer to affiliated agencies, and even how minutes are taken at some meetings. We'll try to call out those issues when they arise to make sure that we have a full discussion about each of them. The budget proposed to you has several outcomes that will also be discussed over the next several weeks. The recommended budget achieves our fiscal goals. The 3% limit on the property tax levy growth has been achieved. The budget gap is bridged through a balance of revenue and expenditure actions. And the county's reliance on one-time revenues to support ongoing expenses is substantially reduced. The budget generally allows us to maintain our current scope of services, but to be clear, there will be critical exceptions to that rule that will be discussed in the departmental reviews. Because we're trying to sustain most of our services with a smaller workforce, there may be delays in some areas, and more work will be shifted to existing employees. We've been able to maintain our reserves above the 5% goal, providing an important buffer against state aid losses and other adverse events that we just can't predict right now. And finally, the budget leaves us still with unfinished work on our goal of a budget that is fully sustainable in this era of diminished resources. A budget that may ultimately have to provide fewer services, but with high quality. This budget is a major step forward in the process of adapting to our new environment. However, work will remain even after this budget is done. To the bottom line on numbers, the recommended $155 million total expenditure budget that includes all of our reimbursable costs is $1.8 million, or 1.2% lower than the 2009 budget. The $73.1 million portion of that tentative budget supported by local dollars is down by 1.3%, or $1 million, from the 2009 budget. If enacted, the tentative budget would increase the county tax levy, again, by $1.1 million, or 3%, and the tax rate would rise by 1 cent per thousand to $5.94. And again, our full-time equivalent payroll roster would decline by 3.4%, or 26 positions. As we begin this review process, I'd like to thank the department heads for responding to a very difficult directive to cut spending with a serious, carefully considered response aimed at maintaining our highest priority service and programs. I've been around a while, and I can assure you that this is a different response than would occur in most other governments. It's a privilege to work with a collection of such excellent professionals. I'd also like to acknowledge the engagement of our employees who've been involved in the process of considering ways to respond to our challenging financial situation and who've submitted many ideas to us through the new electronic suggestion box. As you go through this budget, you'll find that many of their suggestions have been incorporated into our recommended budget. I'd also like to thank the legislature for staying active and engaged in this ongoing process of trying to understand our financial environment and quickly adapt to it in a way that provides a government that's affordable, responsible, and efficient in the way we provide services. My office, Norma, and I, who, by the way, does the work of 10 people, look forward to working with the legislature and departments and agencies over the coming weeks to make sure that when we're done, we've arrived at a budget that is affordable to our residents, responsive to their needs, and serves the community at a very difficult time in our economic history. That's my report, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, department heads. Thank you, all the staff that supported this document. We have about 8 days to begin to digest this until our first budget meeting. But I think we have a schedule that's in here about which departments are which days, so you can prioritize how you put your attention. But I do appreciate this level of effort over the last, essentially since we set our guideline in late April. I see Pam's hand, and then Martha.
I just had I need a point of clarification here. You were saying that we would end up with 752 employees, full-time employees. And earlier we were talking about the fact that the number of employees had dropped to 732 at this point.
Can you explain? 736. Today, actually at the end of the second quarter, there were 736 people employed by the county.
Right.
That's different than a roster, though.
Right. This would allow a funded roster that would support 750, whatever it was, two or three. So there would still be a little play in that. I mean, it is the funded roster.
Okay. Thank you.
Martha, then Frank.
That was an elegant presentation. Thank you, Joe and Norma, and whoever else worked on it. Jim, there were just a ton of information, really well put together. And I know people are going to shoot me if I say, can you give us copies? But, you know, more paper. I'd like to either get that electronically or have a copy.
I think we're going to post it.
Because that was really, I mean, that just really helped me see the big picture. Thank you.
Good, thank you.
Frank Proto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe, you did what you said you were going to do. There are fewer pages in this book.
I think they're just double-sided.
All right. two questions. Obviously, none of us have had a chance to digest this at all. But are we required, if we have a layoff of an individual, what's our requirement for continuing to pay the pension costs for that individual?
David will, I'm sure, give me information.
Do we have
I'm
one?
Wrong. Our commitment ends upon termination.
Pension is based upon working. So if you're no longer on the payroll, you would not be involved in any future pension credits.
Okay, so
can I just make sure that we're clear, though? If someone is vested in the state in the pension system, they will receive their pension benefits when they are eligible to receive them.
Yeah.
So in leaving county employment, if they're vested, it doesn't mean that they've lost what has been invested in their pensions.
So
that will be there for them.
Does the projection and the increase in pension costs for 2010, the 7%, does that reflect what we would, I hate to put it this way, but what we would save by not having 26 people?
Actually, there's a lag. The pension bill is based on the payroll ending on March 31st of each calendar year. So in many respects, the billing we get is not reflective of the current payroll. And in fact, if there was a dramatic reduction in force, it would have no impact in the next year's pension bill because it cuts off on March 31st.
Okay.
But in the subsequent years, you would see that. And it also has the, when you have like retroactive salary adjustments for a settlement, they hit, you know, they hit like you might get 3 years bumps in 1 year based upon a retroactive because it influenced that year.
Okay. Second question. I realize it took a lot of your time, a lot of staff time. This was a lot of work for everyone this year, and it's panned out to be a difficult year to begin with. But within the book, is there any talk about what the effect of some of the recommendations are on future? If we make this decision, what are we doing? Pick a department or pick a program. You know, if we do this, it could have an effect 2 years from now or what the long-range effect of some of them?
As you go through the OTR requests, departments have generally been very good about talking about the immediate and longer-term impact of not putting money behind those requests. So I think you'll find that in the narrative of the OTRs.
Okay. Thank you.
Mike Sigler, then Mike Hatter.
Going back to the 752 employees, I'm not really sure kind of what you're getting at. I mean, that's our target, and we're already down to 736.
I think Norma wanted to clarify.
Why are we shooting for more? I guess,
my question. What do you use to play?
I just want to be clear that 730 employees that are on the payroll currently, they don't include project assistants. And in some cases, when you're looking at the budget document, they include some of those kind of temporary positions. So when we're talking about 753 employees, you're also including that bunch of employees. So you could have five or six seasonals at the Highway Department and project assistants in some departments. So those positions aren't included in the report, the dashboard that Joe provides you on a quarterly basis. So there's a difference between the budgeted FTEs, because the departments have to budget for those project assistants, and what we actually kind of show on the roster.
So we're basically shooting for 730 FTEs then. If you're looking at six layoffs, we have 736 right now. We're looking at 730.
Not including the temporary and seasonal.
Not including the temporary and seasonals.
That would probably be about right.
And we'll get greater clarification. Go ahead,
I think when we meet on the 9th to go through some of these details, we should really talk about how those numbers line up. Okay, because at any given moment, a roster is going to be kind of moving around a little bit. So you need to acknowledge that. But I do think when we have more time at a dedicated meeting, let's go through those roster issues and try to answer all those questions.
I mean, do we have an idea of what our goal is for a number of FTEs?
Our goal, and again, in this budget, you know, our goal is to... our goal is to keep that roster at no more than 750-some positions in 2010. Now, again, we should get into this in the budget hearings when we have an opportunity. Then the lever that you have to control your budget during the course of the year is you can pull back on the number of those positions that are actually filled. So what we try to do is put money behind enough positions to do the programs as the budget intends. And we think that we put money behind 750-some positions. But again, as conditions change in this budget, then you can pull back, as we are this year, and reduce the number of people actually on the payroll through attrition. But again, it deserves more time, Mike, and it's a meeting on the 9th. We can go through it.
Mike Hattery.
This is a question that I'd like an answer to when we meet next week. It appears there's a growth in taxable assessed value. I was wondering if that's an increment on, if that's largely an increment on existing property in the county, or what chunk of that is new lumber.
That's a good question. Okay.
Julie Kiefer.
I was looking ahead a little bit at the capital program over target request page and the other over target request page, and there's something now called county administration change. So I'm assuming that those are your responses to how we meet the guidelines for the budget. Is that what that means?
Yes.
It's a nice phrase. I haven't seen it before. Thank you.
And Martha Robertson?
Mike, I think you said that somewhere there's a calendar of which departments are...
Yes, that was sent. That was sent electronically,
right.
And we can get paper copy to people who have not gotten it yet.
Yeah.
Please. Yeah.
Send it everybody.
Norma will.
Get it on the print.
Okay.
Which will freeze to death before then.
Okay.
Isn't it great?
Nathan Shinagawa.
Yes. Can I make a request that when we're hearing from departments about OTRs, that they give us some sort of history behind each OTR, if there is one, because sometimes we hear, oh, well, I've asked this for 4 years, and then sometimes we haven't heard that they haven't asked it for 4 years. I'd like to know what the history is of that OTR, because if we've rejected it for 3 years in a row, you know, I'd like to know why. I mean, you know, and hopefully I can remember everything in the past 3 years, but considering how many OTRs there are every year, I doubt it. So if we can have that as part of a standard, that any time that there's a history with an OTR that it be talked about, I think that would be very helpful.
Norma, did you have a quick...
I just want to let you know, you'll notice that...
To use the mic, sorry.
You'll notice that unlike in previous years, there are different terms within the document. So it will tell you if it's was approved in previous years or if it's an ongoing. So you'll see some different notes than you've seen in the past as requested from last year.
Okay. Frank Proto.
Joe, I'm sorry I missed this one before, but with regard to the agencies, particularly the ones through the coalition, is there, we're going to have a special presentation on the, we're going to have the public presentation on the 21st at the library. With it being such a tough year, is there any possibility that your staff might talk to the agencies and maybe under the coalition umbrella at a special meeting? Or if any, I have to believe a lot of this affects them. Is there any possibility of doing that?
I'd be willing to do that, yes. And you're right, there will be cuts that affect those agencies. So, yes, I would be willing to do that.
Okay, thank you.
You've given them almost, I think, half an hour, 45 minutes to present the legislation.
Yeah, but maybe a special little head session might not hurt. Thanks, Joe.
Just to inform the public again, we have 7 presentation meetings. After that, we have 4 voting meetings, then we have 2 revisit meetings. This is a very rational, methodical process. I think we're one of the only counties in New York State that sets a budget target early and has our staff work very hard to meet that and gives us all the impact and the outcome. So thank you very much for this entire process we put together. Nathan.
Is there any effort going to be made to standardize the way in which departments present to the legislature?
Yes, I think Joe's had
conversations. And if so, can I hear details about that?
Joe's had conversations with them.
Yeah. All right. In fact, Kevin Sutherland's working on a template right now. We do have what could be a standard template for departments if they choose to use it. We don't want to stifle a department presentation, but we do have a draft that has some key elements: history of the workforce, which we can provide, the FTEs, budget history, which we can provide, and basically what's in your budget, what's not in your budget, and what have you asked for to be restored in your budget, and the impact of those OTRs that you would like restored. So I think that's a pretty good template for most to use.
Great.
Jim Dennis.
I was going to wait till the budget report, but one of the things I want to remind all of us about is we have 8 days before we begin the process, and it would be wonderful if people could take some time, look at the budget, try to put some questions together prior to the beginning of the whole process, so that we don't end up with a situation where we're springing questions on department heads and it looks more like an inquisition as opposed to a discussion. So if you can do that, that would be, I'm sure they'd be grateful for that.
Thank you. I see Dooley's hand and Martha.
Well, that was a question for Jim. Will there be a list of the order that we'll be hearing from departments in?
Yes. Norma has already circulated that email, and we'll get a paper copy of that.
When will that be available?
Tomorrow.
I'm leaving town again, that's why I'm asking. Okay.
I can print it tonight if people want to wait around. I have it on my computer. I think we all have gotten it. Martha Robertson.
Usually we get another notebook of the capital program. And
we got it about a month ago.
Yeah.
Okay, is that's what we're going to be looking at? That's no need to update that any further? Okay.
I thought that there were some pages that needed changes.
Well, we've got a whole set of changes.
In the capital.
Yeah,
Okay.
We sent over a whole set of changes after the facilities and infrastructure meeting. No, they were completely replaced in the books.
Yeah, replacement pages in entirety. Well, this is a lot of paper. This is a lot of thought. Our task is very daunting ahead of us, but I thank you for getting us started well, Joe, and administration. Move on to County Attorney's Report. Steve Flash.
I'm going in for Jonathan Wood this evening, and I really don't have anything you have to report at this time.
If there's no questions, thank you, Steve. On to David Squires, Finance Director.
Sales tax is on.
I have some paper to give to you. I arrived late because we had the audit meeting prior to the meeting tonight. But last meeting, I mentioned about the newly implemented retirement reporting regulations. And so I've taken a bold step in giving you a legal opinion about whether or not you can start immediately. Plain language, it tells me that you can, but the retirement system indicated that it would not. You could start in September, October, November, recording your time, but you'd still have to do it at the start of the next term, within 100 days of the start of the next term. After you've done it once, then you could not have to do it at the start of the next term, because it's good for 8 years. But unfortunately, the language appears to be ambiguous, but their interpretation is that you cannot use the time in 2009 to count towards the logging of the standard work week. And I put that in writing.
And I'm not going to actually entertain questions about this right now. We are going to send this to Government Performance and Work Relations Committee for a recommendation about how we should proceed as a legislature. So, is there anything else that you want to report, David?
And the State Comptroller released today a report about sales tax in New York State. And so I'm going to put that in your box. It compares all the counties, and we're in the top 10. And it's in descending order, with Putnam County being number one, having the largest decline, and we're like number 10 out of. And I attached, it's by region, but I also attached a comparable thing for the county for the first 7 months of the year. That's my report.
Does the state, when it distributes its mandates, does it look at that report and say that the counties will be treated in a rational way based on their sales tax, the declination of their sales tax receipts?
No.
A small interlude. What's being passed out now is what was requested earlier. This is the schedule of each department's presentations, times, dates, and as Jim requested, if in advance of those presentations you could prep, hopefully days in advance, and ask those questions, it will make the presentations go much smoother. Jim Dennis.
This is the time when anyone wants to resign from the budget committee and do that.
Really?
Yeah.
So I'll just note that it looks like most of the department budget presentations will end in six meetings. The seventh meeting is still open for additional presentations if we need people to come back, or we can begin to start possibly voting. We'll decide that as we proceed. But that's just the way it's set up now. Are you ready to move on to? We have no other staff reporting, if I understand correctly, so we'll move on to any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda. Seeing none. Move to the consent agenda. These are resolutions not expected to be controversial that can pass in a single vote. I'll read them, and if you want them taken off, please let me know.
Wait, could you give us a second, please?
Sure. Pam, go ahead.
On our agenda, we had, I think, the resolution E and resolution H are in reverse places. Because Resolution H, for example, is to do with Rule Number 17.
17, yeah.
And that comes from
the Rules Committee.
They're two different documents.
I know they are. I'm just saying that that didn't. That Resolution H came from the Legislative Rules and Procedures Committee.
Yes. Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
I see what you're saying. It's under the wrong committee, yes.
Right. And forget the other one.
Okay. So I will read the five consent agenda resolutions. Under Facilities and Infrastructure, Resolution A, award a bid. This is the on-airport clearance, Ithaca Thompson's Regional Airport. Resolution B, authorizing a consultant agreement with CNS Engineers for construction observation, contract administration services on airport obstruction clearance, Ithaca Thompson's Regional Airport. Resolution C, authorization to issue design approval, bridge painting, various locations. Resolution D, authorization to execute an agreement with Tom Ulysses, West Seneca Road Bridge replacement and future maintenance. Resolution E, this is from Government Performance and Workforce Relations Committee, approving revisions and abolishing policies and procedures of the Tompkins County Government Administrative Policy Manual. Who would like to move the consent agenda? Frank Proto moves it. Jim Dennis seconds. All in favor?
Which ones are still on, please?
All five that were on are still on.
No, I removed D.
I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
I didn't hear you.
Excuse me?
E has minor changes.
E has minor changes. Okay. I have a question about D, if I'm permitted.
You've got to remove it. You have to remove it.
Ask a question after remove it, or you can ask it after you pass consent. Okay. D is now off.
I didn't hear you.
D is now off, and it will be under F&I report. For the other four, are ready to vote. All in favor of the consent agenda?
Aye.
Any opposed? I pass unanimously. We have some staff here waiting for certain items. Someone from the airport for F&I, and we have Greg and Angie here for the human resource payroll system. So I'll take those in order. If Leslie McBean Claiborne, chair of F&I, could move the resolution, and we'll give the report later on.
Colleague Julie Keeper to go ahead with the whole shebang with the resolutions since they came out of the committee.
So it's resolution D you want moved?
Resolution, well, you can add D quickly because there's one question about it, but we want to get to resolution F. So go ahead and do D and F, please.
Resolution D, authorization to execute an agreement with the town of Ulysses about the West Seneca Road Bridge replacement and future maintenance agreement. I'd move that.
There's a second, Pam Mackesy, and there's a question from Carol.
Yeah, I'm in favor of painting bridges. I just wanted to know if we have any sense of the anticipated cost level of this, since it authorizes executing an agreement with the town of Ulysses. I wanted more information about it before I voted for it.
It hasn't gone out to bid, so we don't. Or I don't have an idea of what it will cost. But we have to approve the cost as a legislature, so it will come back to us. Does that sound right, Leslie?
Yes.
Are we ready to vote?
I have another question. Is it in our capital plan?
I don't remember if this is or not. It's been a long time coming. It's been on the MPO's list of things to be done. The state has approved it, but they didn't supply money to do it until this year. It's been waiting for a long time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, with the question answered, we are ready to vote. All in favor of resolution. Frank, you want to vote? Oh, he did vote aye. All in favor of resolution D. Any opposed? That's unanimous. On to resolution F.
It doesn't make sense for me to move this because I would like to move a substitute.
All right, so, Leslin, can you move it?
I will move resolution F in opposition of, let me read my title, in opposition to proposed aircraft rescue and fighting rules contained in the Federal Aviation Administration reauthorization legislation of 2009.
And seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Is there discussion? Julie Keeper.
Yes, I mentioned at committee, and it got covered in the Ithaca Journal article, that the language in the proposed resolution includes very scary numbers about how many people, how much it would cost. But those numbers are not in H.R. 915. The language in H.R. 915 is simple. I ask to have Section 311, which addresses the aircraft rescue and firefighting standards you put in your red folder so you all could see it. What all the language does is say that within 180 days of enactment of the this big FAA Reauthorization Act, which is the funding for everything they do, they will undertake a rulemaking to improve the protection of traveling public, other persons, aircraft, buildings, and the environment from fires and hazardous materials incidents. And it lists a half a dozen areas to be looked at under this rulemaking. And once the rulemaking is complete, it will go out. This is just standard procedure. It goes into the Federal Register to solicit comments. Comments will come in from all the affected industry, airlines, airport managers. They'll come in from the public. They'll come in from any groups who are interested in it. This is the standard way federal and state agencies issue regulations. And then the FAA will say what they will adopt. And part of this bill also requires them to justify to the Office of Management and Budget if those standards that they're recommending are different from the present national consensus standards, which is what governs everything now. So, because at the committee level I did not feel it reasonable to include scary numbers that are not part of the bill we're concerned about, and I did not think the FAA would be so irrational as to make it a rule that will put small commercial airports out of business, I oppose this, and I want to introduce my substitute, if I may, and it has a slightly different title, Expressing Concern About Possible Aircraft Rescue and Firefighting Rules Contained in the FAA Administration Reauthorization Legislation of 2009, and I move that.
Is there a second? Martha Robertson, is there a discussion? This is a complete substitute, so we could take it as a whole, or we could take section by section, and people have different phrases they want to take up.
It's intended to be a complete substitute.
Yes. So on that, I have Mike Hattery, then Nathan Shinagawa, then Martha.
Did the original conference was it initiated by staff?
Yes, Bob Nicholas is here.
Can we ask him to comment on the original?
Thank you.
Good evening. The language that was included in this resolution was based on, scary though that language may be, was based on the fact that the Firefighters Union was recommending a whole rash of improvements, what they considered to be improvements to this system. And there were several bodies, aviation bodies, that looked at this. And this was their consensus as to what would have to happen, the financial consequences and the consequences to individual types of airport if this was adopted. So they're not numbers that were plucked from thin air. They are the consensus of the industry of what would happen. My concern, I think the concern of the aviation groups is that the FAA has a record of making rules supposedly in the interest of safety, but in many times grossly in excess of what is necessary. And I can give you one example that has happened at this airport and many other airports. And that's the fact that we just finished, after Phase 3, spending in excess of $10 million relocating a parallel taxiway from 250-foot separation to 400-foot separation. Did absolutely nothing for the safety of the airport. Was not required, but it was one of those across-the-board FAA regulations regulations that they came up with in the same manner as this one probably would. what the aviation community would like to do is to not have this language in the first place, so that we don't have another battle to fight in refuting their recommendations. They already tried to do this, and they have lobbied very hard in the House of Representatives to not have this language included, but it was included anyway. And what they're trying to do now is to have the same thing happen in the Senate.
I have Nathan Sinagawa next, and Martha.
Yeah, I support the substitute resolution just because the original resolution was just a little too strong for me, because I don't know if I would want to be, I want to say that I categorically reject any and all language in the Senate Federal Aviation Administration Reauthorization Companion Bill that purports to amend ARFF, which are Aircraft Rescue and Firefighting Rules Regulations, in any way. I just think it's a little too strong, because I don't know what's, frankly, I don't know what's in the, what's going to happen with aircraft rescue and firefighting rules in the process of the negotiations over this bill when it's in conference committee. And I don't want to categorically reject any changes, because there might be aircraft rescue and firefighting rules that actually would be beneficial. So, I like Dooley's substitute, because it asks that our senators actually pay attention to this rule and make sure that changes don't adversely affect local, small airports such as ourselves. And I think that's a much more that's a smarter way to go and move forward, because we still talk about, I mean, we still have concern about it, but we don't reject outright any changes to aircraft and firefighting rules.
Martha, then I have Pam and Dooley after that.
I agree with Nathan. What Nathan said. In addition, I mean, I really appreciate Dooley digging into this further and getting the language from the bill. I would just agree. It's the idea that there shouldn't be any amendments in any way just doesn't make any sense. And I thought that I was surprised to learn that standards are voluntary at this point. So I mean, that by itself seems to me maybe ought to be looked at, because there have been a lot of concerns about safety. So I support Dooley's resolution, and I'm very glad that she's taking the time to do this.
Pam, then Dooley, then I have Greg after that.
I'll pass.
Dooley Kiefer?
Well, I realize that if anyone's watching or listening, they have no idea what my substitute says, and it's not very long. Would it be okay for me to read it?
The whole thing? Why don't you just read resolved?
Well, what I wanted to convey was that although I took out the numbers, I left in the worst case language, which says, whereas in the present economic recession, any significant increase in costs to an airport could have a major effect on air service in the Tompkins County community, including even the possibility that all air service would be lost. So that's your worst case, in my view. So the resolve says that the Tompkins County Legislature urges Senator Schumer and Senator Gillibrand to pay particular attention to the details of the rulemaking as they apply to small commercial airports whose level of congestion and needs are not automatically the same as the major commercial airports. That's what I think we want them to do, but for to oppose a rulemaking to address standards that are at present voluntary, although agreed to by the industry, and that haven't been changed in, I don't know, 25 or 30 years, is what I read in going to some of the sites Bob asked me to look at today. It seems foolish to not let the FAA look at what there should be.
Thank you, Dooley. Greg Stevenson?
I think that, I think a lot of things about this. There certainly are enough firefighters at the airport right now, as long as nothing happens. If there's an incident of some sort, it obviously depends on what the incident is, and that will determine whether there's enough folks to take care of the needs that present themselves. I do know that when there's a inbound aircraft that has some sort of difficulty, a fair amount of mutual aid is called to the airport, which would lead me to believe that if any sort of a significant incident were to happen at the airport, that there aren't routinely enough firefighters there. That's not an anomaly limited just to the airport. There's not enough firefighters in many fire stations and on shifts, and fire departments often run short of personnel. Certainly some of the numbers in Resolution F are potentially alarming, and if the bill were to fall in our lap and not be in large part picked up by the FAA like a lot of other efforts at the airport are, that certainly would have a huge negative impact. But there's a lot of opposing interests here. Certainly labor unions are one. An association of airport executives is certainly another. Everybody has their own interests to look out for. But by and large, even though national voluntary consensus standards are voluntary, they're certainly best practices. It's probably wise to follow those standards as best you can. I appreciate Dooley kind of consolidating what I think our message is to the federal government, and that's that this rule could have a real significant impact on our airport. I think we need to be aware of that. I think I certainly can support Dooley's substitute resolution, but there's no way in its current form, knowing what I know about this issue, that I could support the original Resolution F.
Thank you, Greg. Are you ready to vote? Carol Shaw?
Yeah, I also support Dooley's substitute. I have expressed concern in the past here in this room that, and in committee, when I was on F&I, that some of the regulations that we deal with here locally related to our airport and some other services are a result of being alarmist in one direction. And I had concerns that this resolution, as it was written originally, was taking us in an alarmist direction in the other vein. I have expressed concern that in some of the policies, we don't do enough to understand the ways in which we respond to threats, very real threats, in a way that alarms the public. And promotes fear in a way that might be unnecessary. The fact that we're all taking off our shoes in an airport every time we go on a plane when the next attack is not likely to be in somebody's shoe, it's likely to be somewhere else, something that we're not being asked to take off, is something that I think is unnecessary. But I do think that that going from the language expressed in the original resolution expresses concerns in another direction that becomes alarmist in its own way, that we're going to need to go from 9 to 27 firefighters. I just don't see that anywhere in Section 311 as it was written. So I had come here prepared with some changes that toned down F, which I will now no longer introduce because I do think and appreciate that Dooley has taken and expressed the concerns in a, in I think a very rational and well-meaning way. So thank you.
We're approaching 7:30. We have four more speakers. I have Bob, Leslin, Jim, then Mike Sigler.
I just wanted to say that I don't have any problem with Dooley's resolution. I think it's fine. No, it's not as strong as I would recommend, but I don't have any problem with it.
Okay. On to Leslin.
Mr. Chair, that's what I was going to ask Bob so we can go to a vote.
Okay, thank
Bob
you.
Had no problem with it, but a vote.
We're all conjecturing here. On to Jim Dennis.
I'm done. I'm told about it.
Mike Ziegler.
That's fine then. I just wanted to say I agree with Bob that I don't think that Dooley's is strong enough. I think what you're doing is you're opening yourself up for a federal mandate that we're going to end up paying for. The airport, I have a great deal of faith in our airport and what they do. And what this is to me is the federal government coming in and saying, do this. And by the way, you're going to pay for it. And if you don't believe that the federal government's going to do that down the road, look at what they did with security and how they wanted us to pay for the security. So that's basically what this is to me, is the federal government imposing a mandate, doing it kind of in a way that, oh, nobody will really notice. And sure enough, I think that this will happen. And this, I just don't think, is strong enough. I think this says to our senators, yeah, we'll take a look at it, but, you know, if you don't do anything, you know, we'll accept what you want to do, basically.
Are we ready to vote?
Motion to substitute?
The motion is to substitute.
Okay.
All in favor of the substitute motion, please raise your hands. And opposed? 1, 2, 3 opposed. Okay, that is now the main motion. Is there any further debate on that as the main motion? Ready to vote? All in favor as of the main motion, which is now the wording that Dooley has proposed? All in favor? And opposed. Same 3 opposed. That passes with 3 opposed. Thank you very much, Dooley. Thank you very much for the committee's report. I guess we'll get back to the report if there's more. And we're going to move on to Government Performance Workforce Relations Committee. Nathan Shinagawa, Chair, with Resolution G.
Yes. And I just buried my Resolution G on somewhere here. Okay, here we go. I'd like to move Resolution G, Award of Contracts, Purchase and Implementation of Human Resources and Payroll System, and I so move.
Captain Luis Herrera seconds, and please proceed.
All right. I talked about this at length at the last legislature meeting. I know that in the meantime, many of you have talked to Greg and other staff over in IT and have had many of your questions answered. Just a few things. This is a large price tag, but it was budgeted inside of our 09 capital budgets, and so it's budgeted money at this point, because this is a program and a project that has been a long time coming, and it's been something that has been deliberated, discussed for several years now. I believe it's been at least 5 years. Yeah, so it's good to see this finally come to fruition. The technology, I believe, is going to, in many ways, revolutionize the way in which not only administration, but individual department heads and personnel staff, and even employees, can feel empowered about personnel. The mere fact that not only can administration folk understand how whether or not they're on target, whether or not they're going to exceed their budgets when it comes to personnel, or on the flip side, for the employee themselves to find out how much vacation time they have left, or to punch in their own hours using the electronic system. This program empowers everybody, and I think it's well worth the already budgeted money that we've set aside for it. So I hope that you all support this tonight, and if you have any questions, you can. I believe Greg is here to answer them.
Thank you. Leslin?
Mr. Chair, I will support this resolution, but I'm interested in committee. I think I asked a question about, or maybe not, about savings for us. And I know some of them are quantifiable and some are not. So if at some point there can be some number that says, here's what we'll save with using the system, I'd be happy to hear.
Thank you. Greg?
I can try to address that. As part of the implementation of the project, one of the first items that we're trying to cover with the implementation contractor is actually to identify what those performance measurements are prior to starting the project. So on September 18th, we have a day-long session planned with that company, which is Kinsey & Kinsey. This is in advance, might I add, of any contract signing. So there's still details that have to go into the contracts for both companies. But with Kinsey & Kinsey as the implementation firm, we need to nail down how to exactly measure those items and what are those criteria that we would establish in advance of starting the project.
Great. I look forward to hearing that. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Greg. Kathy Luce Herrera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm supporting this for a few reasons. It's been a long time coming. I vaguely remember hearing talk about this in 2001. There was talk about the need for this, and there's a couple of other reasons that are right here in the resolution that this is important and it's timely and it's well supported There was two teams, the Human Resources and Payroll Project Team and the Information Technology Services Department. They unanimously recommended that the project be awarded. And in addition, it looks to me, because I don't see anything under the resolution, that it was unanimously approved by the program committee. The last reason is because it looks like there's funds available in the capital program for this, in the capital fund. So I think we'll be patting ourselves on the back for this. At least later, we'll be glad we're not spending more. And it's well done, well thought out, and thanks for all the hard work, everybody involved.
There's quite an implementation period ahead, but I see Carol Chalk, then Will, then Martha.
Yeah, first I want to thank Greg in particular for spending as much time with me on this morning as you did, and Anita also provided a lot of assistance, as did Angie White here. So thank you. I think I will end up supporting this, but I had great reluctance, and I do want to share my reluctance and a concern, and I want to ask for a promise that while this authorizes you to execute the contract and to implement the contract, Greg talked on the phone this morning about still planning to visit and talk to some end users of this product before signing on the dotted line. And I would like an assurance that you're planning to do that. And let me just talk a bit here about why. I believe that in that computer software of the last 3, 4, 5 years has, for the most part, seemed to expand the work required of the people using it, as opposed to software of the first 15 or so years of computerization, seemed to hold this great promise and to have saved work. The simple databases that we were able to build in the early years that enabled us all to tab from field to field and quickly enter data and quickly perform tasks like adding up the salaries of the 700 and whether they're 730 or 750 employees and make calculations and percentages created great time savings. In my experience of the last numbers of years, what's happened is that the programs that I've used both in workplaces and home settings seem to provide greater capability but require more and more of every user, require you to wait forever as pages load on loaded systems, require every employee to enter pieces of data that weren't necessarily required before. And I hear a lot of complaints at various workplaces about the amount of time people are spending and the additional staff that are required to be hired as a result. So I have concerns that we not go down. I have concerns that are the old tried and true cobbled together system we wrote ourselves may be better. So I just urge us to look carefully not just at what the software company comes with on a clean computer that has nothing else on it and pages preloaded, but to some end users who have had to actually use this software on top of the programs they've already got on their computers and with their staffs already in place. So if I have that assurance from Greg, I will vote for this.
Would you like me to address that now?
Briefly.
Briefly. The first concern about visiting and discussing project with existing clients or customers of the software company and the implementation firm is one we wholeheartedly agree with and have scheduled into the project. We have held off. We've had preliminary conversations, some conference calls with 3 such clients. And we'll continue to make those contacts after today. We also have plans for visiting the closest clients in approximation to us, which are in both New York State and in Pennsylvania. Right, so we're looking at 4 site visits as proposed.
It's too bad it's not Aruba or something. On to Will Burbank.
Thank you, Mike. This project is $233,000 for the software contract and $344,000 for the implementation.
Correct.
$500,000. What is the time life of this whole project? And when do you think it will become obsolete?
Well, generally speaking, for software of this nature, we're looking at a life cycle of 10 years within the product migration path that we're looking at. We're actually starting with Lawson at an early kind of 9.1 level of their software. So they tend to roll out and continue at that platform for at least 8 to 10 years is what they're telling us. After that, then if they do shift platforms and migrate to another platform after that period of time, it still is included. The cost of doing that is included within the price that we're paying on the annual basis for operational requirements and support. So we always have the option to look at migrating to the next version of their software.
And is the operational support in addition to those?
Yes, that would be. We have covered completely the operational costs for the project within the contract for the first year. That's through 2010. So we've got them to agree to extending that for a period beyond 12 months. So there would be an additional operational cost right now, which is calculated between $30,000 to $35,000 for that additional operational expense that hit us in 2011.
So every year from 2011 on, there'll be about a $30,000 operational.
That's correct, based on the current modules that we're purchasing from this company.
So we are talking about generating better information, but do we have any analysis of the savings that would...
Well, as an example, what we're hoping to achieve is that there's a great deal of redundancy of data entry that occurs in the process of the payroll system or between HR and payroll. So that's one of the focuses that we're really looking at, is to try and eliminate that redundancy so all the data is only entered into one system. We currently have over 14 disparate databases and applications that manage the processes that we're talking about with one centralized enterprise system that we're looking at in pursuing. The exact numbers, I can't tell you what they are, and I will. I mean, that's certainly what we're aiming to do, is to achieve efficiencies, but we don't have any analysis of what that means until we really look at the details of the software implementation.
Well, I guess just in a gross sense, will this save us money, or is this just going to make things better in a better environment, or both?
Well, it's certainly going to make things better, and the analysis of data and the presentation of information and the access to the information is certainly going to be much easier. In terms of how it saves the county money, I really can't answer that. It may not in the long run. It's really hard to say. If it saves us money, it would be in the reduction of employees. That's the only way I could ever identify it. And I can't tell you what that would be right now.
Okay. I have Martha, then Nathan.
To follow that up, so your office is now supporting 14 different databases out there among our departments, and now you'll be able to kind of focus on one?
Yes, that is correct.
So maybe the sanity level of your staff?
Oh, absolutely. There's also the issue here that hasn't been discussed, and that is we have all these homegrown applications that have been primarily developed and programmed by one or two employees in the county. And if one of those people leaves the county government and we can't run payroll, we are in a world of hurt.
And I'm interested, and I sent you a note today that you may have answered, but I had to leave the house. So is it typical to have two different businesses like this, and have these two companies worked together before?
Yeah, these two companies have worked together for over a decade. And Kinsey & Kinsey has continued to be a certified company with Lawson software for implementation and have done over 50 implementations of their software.
On to Nathan.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think that, well, it's hard to say whether or not it will reduce costs right now. Just like with so many things with governments, I think that you can say that it will reduce future costs. You know, and because whenever we talk about budgeting, we always talk about, you know, reducing local spending, but we mean reducing local spending from the growth of spending, right? That's why even though you cut $2 million, you're still increasing the levy by 3%, right? Likewise, I think that with this project, you know, you are saving yourselves the future cost of having to buy a new system 3 or 4 years down the road, you know, without all this preparation, if the databases fail and that person that programmed it is no longer there. You're also saving the future cost, and this is what David mentioned during the Government Performance and Workforce Relations Committee meeting, that you would actually, you will have to develop, to basically build a building for the record storage of just these timesheets and all the other paperwork that you have building up and accumulating. And that will be significantly, if not almost completely reduced, at least from the payroll perspective, with the implementation of the system. So I think that that there are future costs that that justify future cost reductions from the growth of spending that justify this project.
On to Pam. I'd like to move to a vote.
Well, I'm going to support this because when I first got on the legislature almost 4 years ago, when we were looking at budget and we were trying to figure out places where we could save money and perhaps make some cuts, I went on a search for a number in terms of the actual number of people that we had working and the positions that were unfilled, and nobody could give me that information. And so just for the simple fact of budgeting, I mean, I think probably things have advanced since then. 4 years ago, but just in that sense, if we have a clearer understanding of who we have working and how many people and that we can and have access to that information quickly, and that of course is assuming that these programs work, and that always in my mind is a big assumption. But then I'm not a computer person, and I can hardly make any program work.
We're past the time. We're going to take a break. I see Dooley. I know Greg wants to make a comment. Go ahead, Dooley.
I'll support this because Greg has made a very good case for it. But the only thing I worry about is employees being tempted to spend time making colorful charts and graphs because you can ask so many questions and you get these glitzy-looking responses. So watch out for that.
We look forward to it, actually.
And Greg, you had an additional point
to make?
Yeah,
some facts here. 2008, total salaries and fringes amounted to just over $50 million in Tompkins County government across departments. What we're talking about for the implementation and the cost of this project is about 1% of what we spend on an annual basis for salary and fringes. So to really look at that from that perspective. From ongoing support costs, we're looking at probably less than 0.08% of that annual amount.
So, are we ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution G? Anyone opposed? Thank you very much. Thank you, Angie. Thank you, Greg. 2 years in coming, and good luck to the implementation to all of us. Thank you, David. Thank you, Anita. We have one more resolution. We have about 7 committee reports. Would people like to take a break, or you want to keep moving?
Let's keep going.
Okay. I'm seeing more heads to keep moving than a break.
Take a break.
All right. How many want to take a break?
Break.
And how many want to keep moving? All right, we'll take a 5-minute break.
We don't have a majority for anything.